The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 20th of September, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Bert Monroe, Head of Business Development at Hummingbird Resources, and Bert discusses their initial exploration results and the significance of adding a second ball mill at the Yanfolila mine. Plus, I also have Steve Williams, Co-Chief Executive Officer of Rheobold Resources, RBD, and Stephen talks about the successful test at their VG3 well within the West Brentwood license in California. And Bill Morgan, Chief Financial Officer of Anglo Asian Mining, AAZ, and Bill goes over some of the highlights from their interim results and that they've just declared a maiden dividend. I also have on the podcast Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talking about i3 Energy, Itaconics, Smart Metering Systems, and Hastings Group. Plus, as always, I have a list of the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
To receive free company updates straight to the front screen of your smartphone whenever a company you follow releases significant news, download the free Vox Markets app from voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Bert Monroe, Head of Business Development at Hummingbird Resources. HUM is the ticker there. Bert, thanks for joining me.
Not at all. Thanks for having me on, Justin.
Now, you've had some news out, initial exploration results, and there's also more bits of news within that, and we'll get that in a bit. Before we do, Bert, if someone's listening right now and they've never listened to podcasts before and don't know anything about Hummingbird, could you explain, summarise in a minute or less, what are you all about?
Yeah, no problem. We're an AIM-listed gold company. We've got a gold mine producing in Mali, the Yanfolila gold mine. It went into production right at the end of last year, and it ramped up to commercial production at the end of Q2 of this year, where we produced 33,000 ounces at just under 800 all in. We've also got a large project in Liberia and a number of other exploration licenses around West Africa as well. So AIM-listed gold company currently focused in West Africa.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, so you've done released initial exploration results and a second ball mill approved for Yanfolila. So take us through. So can you explain first the significance of your 2018 exploration program and particularly the initial results you report today, which are looking quite good, I think, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the big focuses for us this year, on top of obviously delivering the operations and hitting our targeted ounces for the year, was growing the mine life. One of the things Yanfolila has is a large resource base, but a reserve base, which is, you know, currently about a 7-year mine life. So one of the big things we wanted to do this year is push out our mine life to, you know, as long as possible, and obviously through next year. So that's one of the focuses. And obviously we've committed to doing around 50,000 meters of drilling this year. And these are the first results out of that program.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, it's probably worth mentioning, is that some of the sort of... let's go into the ball mill first, because you mentioned that in the RNS as well. People may not know what that means, a ball mill. So what impact... You've got a second ball mill. What impact would the ball mill have on operations in short and sort of medium-long term there?
Yeah, so the two things are sort of twinned together deliberately. So essentially, at the moment, the Yanfolila mine, from the feasibility study, is got a 1.24 million tonnes per annum throughput capacity. Is that's based on a blend of ores. So currently we've been using a lot of oxide material, and then obviously as the mine goes later in its mine life, it moves on to fresh, harder material, so different types of ore. So the plant capacity drops as you go from a blend of ores from 1.24 million tonnes a year down to a million tonnes a year when you're on all hard material, all fresh rock. So obviously one of the things we're looking to do with these drilling results is expand our mine life, obviously make the mine life longer, but also with that we're looking to increase the output of the mine. So in our feasibility study, there was budgeted for in sustaining capex a tertiary crusher, which would have come in year two, so next year, and that would have allowed us, when we were doing 100% fresh ore, to maintain that million tonnes a year throughput, which is in the feasibility study. So the significance of today's announcement is that instead of doing a tertiary crusher, we're not going to do a tertiary crusher. We're going to put in a second ball mill. So we'll have two of them. And that will allow us to increase the throughput from a million tonnes a year to 1.24 million tonnes a year when processing 100% fresh rock. So obviously that's 24% increase in throughput capacity, which obviously assuming the same grade of ore, obviously you're going to get 24% more production, which is obviously very significant.
Yeah. Okay. So like I said, the results are decent, very good, some of them indeed. But how much more drilling is anticipated for the rest of the year, and where are you targeting then?
Yeah, so we've drilled just around 10,000 meters, so far. It's obviously got about 40,000 meters to go. We're just coming out of the wet season now, so they've got four rigs there. One of them is a very big RC rig, so as it gets drier, the rate that it'll drill at will get quicker and quicker. And actually, the drilling rates across all the rigs will get quicker and quicker as it gets drier. So obviously, we've done about a quarter of the meters, nearly a quarter of the meters we're due to do. So we'll be obviously got plenty of work to do in the next couple of months, but you know, that's the target, certainly by give or take the end of November, to have drilled all those meters, and then obviously steadily be getting results out through then as well.
Yeah. And it's funny, isn't it? At the moment, sentiment on gold is low, which is the time to be buying, really, isn't it? You know, I mean, that's the way it works.
The gold price is not like, I mean, I guess it's been weak-ish this year, but actually still, I mean, the gold price this morning is over $1,200 now. So,
yeah.
You know, last quarter we were producing at just under 800. So, you know, you're still making very good margin on those ounces.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just think, you know, at the moment, the spotlight is off gold a little bit. That's a good time to look at gold, I think. Okay, but one final thing, as you know, three reasons why someone listening to this right now who's not following you, why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, no problem. So I guess first and foremost, we have an operating gold mine, which has been delivering. It delivered in Q1, ramped up successfully, and Q2 delivered extremely good results. Secondly, we announced this morning, obviously, some exploration results, which show that the mine life looks like it should be expanding and getting much larger, with those good grades and widths coming through on areas which aren't currently on the mine plan. And thirdly, we intend to make the mine bigger. So the second ball mill announced today also has the ability to make the mine, you know, 24% additional throughput. So those are those would be my three reasons today. Two of them from the back of this RNS this morning, which is all positive.
Marvellous stuff. Bert, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Great. Thanks a lot, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Stephen Williams, Co-Chief Executive Officer of Rehobold Resources. RBD is the ticker there. Stephen, thanks for joining me.
Oh, delighted. Thanks for having us.
Now, you've provided or released an update on your interest in California, your project there, and we'll get into the details on that in a bit. Before we do, Stephen, there are people new to the podcast every day. There's people not familiar with the company. So can you summarise what Rehobold Resources is all about, please?
Yeah, sure. So we really set up Rehobold about a year ago. With a strategy that's pretty unique amongst the junior oil and gas space. And the idea behind Rehobold is that we will provide funding for upstream projects with near-term high-impact drilling on already de-risked assets. And these are assets or projects that have been struggling to progress because we're in an industry environment that starved them of capital for a number of years. So, you know, essentially we can access what we consider to be very good quality projects with very high returns, and we can access those projects crucially at a very low entry cost. And we can also take advantage of very low drilling costs that are available in the market today. And all of that should then translate in the event of successful drilling into very good returns for Rehobold and its shareholders.
Yeah, and just give us a quick flavour of where you do have investments at the moment.
Yeah, so we're in the middle of our six-well drilling campaign, which covers assets in California, which we'll talk about in a minute, in the UK and in Romania. We're on the lookout for additional projects elsewhere.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, so you've announced here a successful test at VG3 well, the West Brentwood license. Take us through the details here, if you could, Stephen.
Yeah, so I mean, a couple of weeks ago, we announced a successful commercial discovery at VG3, which is the first well that we've drilled in California and the first well we've drilled under the Rehobold strategy. This morning, we were delighted to be able to announce a flow rate of over 200 barrels a day, and the operator is now putting production facilities in place for a 200 barrel a day production from this well with a little bit of gas as well. Now, this is very, very impressive flow rate, and it's considerably higher than we have been assuming internally at Rehobald, and considerably higher than we'd been modelling. The economics associated with VG3 that we've talked about before are extremely strong. On a per barrel basis, it's very, very high. We would have been talking about this as an extremely economic and extremely high value project at a much lower flow rate than this. Clearly, at 200 barrels a day, this is phenomenal from an economic perspective. So we're absolutely delighted with the result there.
Yeah, and what's net to you there from that then, Stephen?
So we've earned into 50% equity interest. We funded that first well at 100% to earn into a 50% equity interest. Going forward, we expect now to drill more wells at West Brentwood, and they will be drilled at a 50% paying interest and a 50% equity interest.
I understand. And outside California, what's happening elsewhere?
So we're moving ahead with the other three wells that are outside of California that we're planning to drill over the next few months. So there's two wells offshore in the UK. That's Wick and Coulter that we're drilling with the operator Corallian Energy. And then the final well in the campaign, as it stands, is in Romania. And that's moving forward as well. We expect to drill that around about year end.
Yeah. And so Wick and Coulter. So Wick is first, is it?
Yeah, Wick is likely to be first, yeah.
Okay, and then Coulter over there. Excellent stuff. So, as far as you're concerned, I did ask Sachin this when he came on, but personally, I know you haven't been, on the market long, you've been around for long, but are you happy with your progress so far?
Oh, we're absolutely delighted with the progress so far. I think, as I said, in less than a year, we've put together this portfolio, which has this very intense drilling campaign associated with it. Clearly, the first drilling event has now been a very good success, so that's extremely encouraging as well. We've got line of sight on multiple wells coming over the next few months, and we've managed to raise additional capital at higher share prices each time we've done a fundraise, which allows us to go after more assets and put more into the portfolio.
Marvellous stuff. Well, listen, Stephen, if someone's listening to this, likes the sound of this, but are not yet following the story, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, well, the first one is obviously California itself. So, as I said, very strong economics are going to be associated with this first well. But we've got a lot more going on in California too. So we'll next be drilling at Munro Swell, which is a very similar kind of well, has many, many similar characteristics to VG3. But there's more running room associated with the Munro Swell field. It's a bigger field, so that's extremely exciting. And we'll be spudding that within the next few weeks. Secondly, we obviously have this diverse portfolio, as we've talked about. So we will be having multiple drilling events coming up over the next few months, so there's always going to be another well to be looking forward to. And finally, as I briefly mentioned just a minute ago, we are well funded at the moment. We've got a very supportive institutional based shareholder register, and so we are going to be bringing additional projects into the portfolio.
Marvellous stuff, Stephen, good to chat to you, and like you said, lots going on, so no doubt we'll be chatting again and catching up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Great, thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Bill Morgan, Chief Financial Officer of Anglo Asian Mining. AAZ is the ticker there. Bill, thanks for joining me.
No, thank you for having me, and good morning.
Yeah, good morning to you. Well, listen, you've announced some good news out, interim results, and we'll go into that in a bit, some of the highlights. But Bill, there's always new people tuning in, and there are people, I'm sure, not familiar with the company. So could you give us a summary? What is Anglo Asian Mining all about, please?
Okay, well, we are an AIM-listed miner. We operate solely within Azerbaijan, and we operate mainly at a big mining concession that we have in the west of Azerbaijan, in the foothills of the Caucasus Mountains. This concession is called Gedabek. Mm-hmm. At Gedabek, we have currently three mines. We have a big main open pit, we have a Gadir underground mine, and we have Ugor, which is another open pit mine. We've got two main processing facilities. We do agitation leaching, which is very similar to carbon in leaching, is dissolving the cyanide dissolving the gold in cyanide and then getting it out through electrolysis. And we have a flotation plant. We produce two products. We produce gold doré, which is a mixture of gold and silver, which we fly out the country every week to a gold refiner in Switzerland. And then we produce gold bullion and gold silver and silver bullion, which we sell. And we also produce a copper, gold and silver concentrate. And this is collected each week by a Swiss metal trader. They basically send lorries to our site and take it away by road. The facility that we have at Giedebeck is an excellent facility. We've got very good infrastructure. We're by a main road. We have electrical power from the grid. We've got great water supplies. We've recently built a water treatment plant to recycle water. And it's a very good site indeed. We're a very low-cost producer. Our ASC for the 6 months we've just released was around about 540 ounces. It's a very good country to operate in. And as well as the fact that we are a producer, because we've got a lot of land at Giedebeck, we've got over 300 square kilometres, we've got a lot of prospective territory. And as I say, we've got two open pit mines. One we only recently discovered, Ugor, which we brought into production very quickly because we've got a very good licensing regime. And recent geological results are showing that there is a lot more to come from the land that we have. And to really try and fully exploit this, we'll be doing an aerial survey using electromagnetism detection over the whole site this coming, later September and early October. So that's really a potted version of Anglo-Asian mining.
Yeah, we've got a lot going on. So let's get to these interim results for the 6 months to the 30th of June. And I don't want to steal your thunder here, but you've also announced, it must be decent, because you've announced a maiden dividend. Take us through some of the highlights, if you could, Bill.
Okay, well, the numbers are very, very good, actually. Last year, we set upon a strategic review, which really put a lot of actions into place that we carried out last year in terms of getting the mines into good shape and various other things we did. And really, all of that work that we did last year is really now coming through strongly into our financial results. So 4 years ago, we were over $50 million within debt and very little cash. At the half year, at the end of June, we were almost net cash, and we've actually just announced that we are now net cash. So obviously cash is very important, and from a cash perspective, we turned the company around from being, you know, pretty heavily in debt to being into a net cash position. So that's the thing that people is obviously focusing on very strongly. But our revenue has increased. In the 6 months to the end of June, it was $40 million compared to $30 million in the previous 6 months. Our all-in sustaining cost is good. It's $543 per ounce in the 6 months compared to $564 per ounce in the previous 6 months. Profits are now $8.1 million in the 6 months compared to a loss in the previous months. But the figure that everybody's focusing on is the strong cash generation. And in the 6 months to the end of June, we generated just under $25 million, which for a company of this size is, you know, is a significant amount of cash generated.
Yeah, and do you think more to come as well, Bill? Are you confident of that?
Yes, I think we are confident. The board has put a dividend policy in place that we will be distributing 25% of our free cash flow, and we'll be doing that as two dividends each year, an equal dividend of an interim and a final. And our free cash flow in the 6 months was $16 million, and we've declared a dividend of 3 cents. Now, obviously, the board believes that that dividend is sustainable, and therefore we believe that the financial performance of the company is sustainable, otherwise we wouldn't declare a dividend. So yes, we think that the company now is in a very good financial position and a sustainable financial position.
Absolutely. Excellent stuff. Well Bill, if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of the progress you've highlighted there, underlined, but are not following the story as yet, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay. Well, the first reason is that we're a very good mixture of both being a profitable production company with growing production, but because of the amount of territory that we have under concession, we've also got a lot of potential. So you could look at us from both hats. You could say this is a producing company, but this is also an exploration company. So we think that is quite unusual for a miner of this size to have both activities going on very strongly. Mm-hmm. Secondly, we've just released a new JORC resource. for our main open pit at Geedebeck, which shows that we've got at least another 5 to 6 years of mine life and over 1 million ounces worth of gold. So again, this is a company which has got sustainable production. And this, again, is an issue that people have had with us. But, you know, we would say that the company certainly has now got sustainable production. And the third reason, I think, is financial. I mean, we are paying 3 cents per share dividend. We're expecting that dividend to be sustainable. And there are very few miners out there, especially with a lot of exploration activity, that you're also getting paid a dividend. So I think that is a very compelling prospect for people who want to be exposed to the gold mining industry.
Absolutely. Bill, it's good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're right, Al.
I'm very good, Jess. Thanks. Although the weather seems to have changed dramatically today, it's blowing a gale here in Seaford. Looks like certainly mid-autumn, if not mid-winter, compared to yesterday, which was like mid-summer. But crazy English weather for you. But yes,
yeah,
all good.
It's slowly, every now and again, you see it edging towards the autumn-winter in you. So in the mornings, it's getting a bit chillier. In the evening, it's a bit chillier. But luckily, it's been holding up in the middle part of the day, quite warm. But yeah, I do feel they're creeping in these cold days, you know, slowly.
Yeah, more like stampeding this morning, I must say.
It's a bit windy. Yeah. Anyway, bit windy. From stocks, from weather to stocks, I should say. What are we looking at, Al?
Okay, well, before I go through today's list of stocks, just want to say, well done you. You know, you picked
you.
Out Europa, which is talking about stampeding. It's stampeding higher as we speak, and it's had a wonderful couple of days on the market. And also Predator Oil and Gas, which is just phenomenal. I mean, when we spoke about it, I think it was 2.5p. It's now 9.5p. It's just... It's rocketing on the back of some very good assets. Well spotted.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, I've been doing this a series of videos, you know, and it's helped me a lot because it's made me evaluate the winners I've had, the losers I've had, and looking at the characteristics that these stocks have. And they do share characteristics, these big winners, you know, and gainers. And I, two there you mentioned, my two biggest holdings, pretty much, and they've done exceptionally well. You know, one's already 300%, like Predator Oil and Gas. Europa's over 100%. But they're both, you know, tiny market caps with big assets, you know, and that's essentially what it comes down to. Of course, there's other things you have to look for. You have to make sure they have cash and they are progressing those assets there's other things. But yeah, but, you know, they do have characteristics, and just looking at the value and potential value of these companies. Like when I looked at Predator Oil and Gas, to me, I normally do scale in. But when I talked to Paul on the podcast and he told me about his company and I looked through it all and started writing a blog, I thought, hang on a sec, this is valued at, it was 2.35 pence. They got 100 million shares, so that was a 2.35 market cap. They had 1.3 in cash. And I thought, well, hang on, they've got massive assets in the IRC. I mean, absolutely ginormous. You know, best case scenario is 1.6 billion sort of oil equivalent barrels. And they've got Trinidad as well, which is near term, which will underpin near term sort of CO2 enhanced oil recovery, which will more than underpin their valuation by a couple of times already. And that was low risk. And I thought they're not valued. They're not valued at all at this level. And Paul holds 44% of the stock. And I thought, right, I just jumped in there. And I went in quite sort of biggish on my initial buy. So I thought I'm happy to, it can't go much further down. I thought, no way it's going to go further down than this. And luckily it didn't. It got, you know, I gave it a bit of publicity. And people saw that it was undervalued, and it's just gone crazy. And it's in the last 30 days, it's had about 10 down days, that's all. So 20 up days. So it's gone nuts, you know. But better than I could have ever wished for. But there we are. You know, we live and learn, and it's always worth keeping a track of your winning. Have a strategy, you know. I think strategies are very important, you know.
It is. But anyway, just say take a world's pat on the back for that, because that's two great finds there. And certainly I'm well invested into EUZ, and I think there's a lot more to come there too. And as you say, still a tiny market cap against huge assets in a very sort of positive environment for mining. So
Absolutely. Cool. What are you looking at there now?
Okay, four stocks today. Want to look at i3 Energy first of all. We're talking about big winners. I mean, this actually was one of my big winners. I first got into the stock at 22 pence, and you know, the stock has rocketed, and I did sell out a bit. I took some profits at £1.25. And of course, the stock has come back sharply this morning on the back of some news, which is, in my opinion, a massive, massive overreaction. What the company have actually said is that just to recap for listeners, i3 Energy have raised some money in 2016 after acquiring the Liberator Field license, which is next to next to an operating field in the North Sea, in place with all the infrastructure, similar in some ways to the Killick field that's owned by Predator. You know, it's close to infrastructure and easy to, almost like a plug and play solution, as it were. Now, i3, the board includes Neil Carson, who's the CEO, who's ex Ithaca Energy, and Graham Heath, who's the CFO. They have been developing the field to start work and to start production at the Liberator field, which they've required several other licenses to expand the size and the reach of the field. They have backing from City Financial Investment Company. They have loan facilities in place, and they today announced an update with its potential joint venture partner that's undertaken during a 90-day period of exclusivity, undertaken due diligence and so on. And what's happened today is that some of the areas of that due deal they were not able to complete within the 90 days. And Graham Heath said this morning, the independent work carried out by a potential JV partner validates the significant potential of the Liberator asset. We don't see the delay in concluding the potential joint venture discussions as an impediment to business as usual. So for the shares to be sold off and an early fall of some 24% seems to be a massive oversell. So in my opinion, this weakness is a great opportunity to get into what I believe is a huge potential asset that could carry on and deliver further value going forward. There's something like 11.5 million barrels of oil. Hang on a second, let's just see. There's a pre-tax valuation on the asset of $328 million. So, So where we are now doesn't really get anywhere near that. And certainly by broadening the asset, they will have added further value over the past few months. So,
yeah, wasn't it like about $22 million with their first Liberator, and the extension they've had will lose up to 80 million or 60 to 80 million barrels of oil, I think it is there. So, someone asked me my opinion because obviously I was invested in them, and I said, you know, this is a delay which no one likes, doesn't affect the fundamentals, that they've got a great asset there, and you know, highly probable they will do a JV deal, if not with this company they're in talks with now, with another one, because it's, you know, the costs of operations are quite low, highly profitable, especially at this oil price at the moment. So, you know, the thing is, the worst case scenario, it's a delay. And that's
exactly. You know? But the important thing is with an asset like this is that it's adjacent to an operating field that's producing oil. So it's literally it's a plug and play. Once the due diligence is done, once the assessment is complete, then let's plug it in. Let's start producing oil, and that's literally where i3 is. So in my opinion, this is a massive sell off. I do still hold stock, and I expect a lot more to come. But please do your own research.
Absolutely more. And of course, oil and gas, quite risky, but look into it. Okay, Marvis, anything else, Alf?
Yes, I want to talk about Itaconics, ITX. Now, this was brought to my attention on Twitter by Afzal Zali, who's...
He's touched you up as well, as he pushed me in their direction as well. I had a look at them quickly.
I had a look, and what we've seen with Itaconics is that the company has the shares were suspended and then came back to market. There's a new CEO, John Shaw, in place. They raised $3.5 million in an open offer at 2p, and shares are currently trading at 2.85p. So, you could look at it and say if there's any downside, then it will probably go back down to the price at which they raise the money. Now, what do Itaconix do? They produce sustainable, bio-based, environmentally friendly products. Bio-based polymers from itaconic acid, and those polymers are used in a variety of applications, for example in laundry, water softening, detergents for agriculture industry, and also there's a product that they use that removes smells, which is obviously very nice, and that's actually
yeah, absolutely very nice.
Yeah. Yes, and that's actually been taken by Croda, and where the company are bringing the opportunity to market is via these collaborative partnerships. They have partnerships now with AkzoNobel, with Croda, and with Solvay to accelerate the access of these markets across what obviously is between those three companies a very broad range of products. So it's an environmental solution to make existing chemicals, treatments, and solutions environmentally friendly, sustainable, and so on. They're operating currently in 14 countries. They estimate their turnover could increase to something like 1.4 billion if their solution is taken up on every level by their partners. Interesting to know as well.
Where did they say this? So 1.4 billion in revenue?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Estimated potential turnover of 1.4 billion. Once all the if every single potential opportunity were taken up by the partners and the bio-based polymer solutions from Itaconix were put into place with them, then clearly the turnover would rise to that level. But on the basis that it's taken up, and of course, as with the joint ventures they've got so far, and the collaborations are being run out across a number of products, and then that it will increase as time goes forward based on the success of that. But 269 million shares in issue, 77% of that is held with institutions with a 23% free float, and that's interesting to me because obviously that sort of institutional backing for a company that's worth with a 7 million market cap says to me that it looks as though it's got a very positive future with that sort of institutional backing. So the company is funded. It's got a new CEO in place working alongside Kevin Matthews, who's now the executive chairman. And if you go to the Itaconix website, there's an interview with Andy Scott from Proactive, where Kevin's interviewed.
Don't you dare talk about Proactive on this podcast, Alan.
My word. Okay.
If you said the F word, it'd been worse. Honestly.
Okay.
Wouldn't have been as worse. I understand. Right. But every now and again, I will look at it. I admit, I will look at a video.
Okay. But anyway, it's go to Itaconix, the Itaconix website, which is itaconix.com, all will be seen there. But I think this company is well worth a look. The shares obviously have slipped back through the year, and it's now pretty well trading at year lows. The shares have been as high as 24p on the year, currently trading at 2.85p. So there's an awful lot of upside to come, and to my mind, not a great deal of downside. So take a good look.
Well, there is. It can go to zero.
It could go to zero, of course, yeah. And any share could go to zero. Barclays Bank could go to zero. Right. That is a risk of trading shares. But yes, this is a company with a great deal of potential.
At the moment, I know it's going through significant structural change, isn't it? And so what I did do, I mean, Avsel, hollered him to me, and he's over the story more than I am. So I'm just looking at historical documents, which is their preliminary results, which is a release on the 12th of July, for the year ending December 2017. And of course, there's a heck of a, I think it was they lost 10 million that year, last year. So I was thinking, wow, that's a lot, because the market cap is only, sort of 7 million now. So yeah. I don't know what's changed, and I can't seem to work it forward, So loss before taxation, loss before tax from continuing operations, 11.68 million, sorry.
Yeah.
So there's reduced loss. So obviously they're undergoing huge structural change, but I can't see, as yet. I need another set of results actually to update me on this, because I don't know where they are at the moment in their development and their progress with the new board and stuff. But I've just added it to my watch list, so I will get an RNS whenever they release one. Yeah, that's the power of Vox, of course. So I'll read up to date. But they should. With July. When's the next set of results? August, September, October, November, December. Okay, it's a while off, but. Yeah, I can't work out. There's lots of stuff going on there.
Well, Astell's change. Great. I received a number of messages from Astell with ideas, but this one particularly caught my eye. I just think, you know, it's been through that restructuring process, and clearly the shares have come back an awful long way. But it's in a niche area, and you know, when a little company like this has collaborative partnerships with pharma giants like ExxonMobil, Croda, and Solvay, then you know that sort of makes me sit up and take a look. And I think, you know, on the basis of those relationships, if it can get that spread of its products away across the range of products offered by those three chemical giants, then you know there could be a real sea change in the company. But clearly there are risks associated with this, but it's an interesting sort of company, a niche operator, rather than the stuff that we usually talk about on here, which of course is the oil and gas and the mining companies.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what's next, Al?
Okay, another company we've spoken about on many occasions, and this company had listeners invested right at the start when we first started talking about it, which was about £2.50. Then they'd have made a decent amount of money and collected a divvy along the way. This is Smart Metering Systems. SMS is the EPIC code. Mm-hmm. Now, the company is now worth £687 million. The company does what it's what the name would imply, which is it supplies smart metering systems for gas, electricity, energy management solutions, and it also has a data collection arm and for major products and collaborations with other industry players. Most recently signed a distribution agreement with Good Energy, which of course is the eco-friendly energy company. The company pays a dividend yield of just under 1%. Shares have come back quite a long way over over the summer. The shares have traded as high as £9, which incidentally is the price target for broker Canaccord for this stock, remains unchanged, and has come back to trade at just over 6p, just off year lows of 587p. Interim results this morning: EBITDA are up nearly 30% to £23 million. Pre-tax profits up 9% to £10 million. Revenues up 27%, and the dividend was increased by 15% to 2p. Now, this company just keeps on delivering growth, keeps on doing what it says on the tin. CEO Alan Foy, who's been there all the way through, says business during the period has grown at record levels, and the smart metering program continues to roll out. And as I'm sure everyone knows, if with the new smart metering programs, they basically plug into your meter, and rather than you having to go to read the meter, it sends the information automatically directly to the central computer, which is a good or a bad thing depending on how much you trust the technology. Mm-hmm. But regardless, smart metering systems has delivered growth, and those that got invested early on will have done very well. But either way, the pullback in the shares this year, I think, now provides a good opportunity to get back into stock on the back of these results. Results today.
Hmm. Yes. Well, I'm looking at the chart there. Very interesting levels we're at right now, and yeah, support. Definitely. And yeah, exactly. £6. I mean, it may bump along because it's down below the 200-day moving average, but it may bump along here for a while. But £6 does seem like a decent level of support. And of course, you know, on a simplified term, charts and share prices like round figures like that. And there's previous sort of resistance here back in March, May. It couldn't get above £6. It dipped down. Did I go 480, then come up and smash through it? So, we'll see. I let the chart settle down for a while, but it looks an interesting space. Anything else?
I think historically on this stock too, just if you just look at the performance over a longer period of time, so if you look at the three-year chart, you know, that's a pretty strong performance. The pullback this year is the most significant pullback really in the history of the stock, but given the results today and the fact the stock's up this morning, you know, if it recovers that 200-day, as you say, I think it's going to power on again and retest year highs. But that is my opinion. It's not a fact, so do your own research.
Yes. Okay. Anything else, Hilaire? You look again.
Yes, indeed. This is a stock that was picked out by my colleague Dr. David Ball at Vectorvest. It's an insurance company called Hastings Group Holdings, and it's based in my neck of the woods, down on the south coast in Bexhill-on-Sea, founded in 1996. Mm-hmm. Epicode is HSTG. It's a fast-growing insurance provider for motor and general home insurance and so on. It's trades as Hastings Premier, Premier, Hastings Direct, People's Choice, and Insure Pink. And 90% of the policies, of its policies, are directly underwritten by its own Gibraltar-based insurer, which is Advantage Insurance Company. So everything's in house. The Vetovest picked up the stock in May this year. There's a key metric on the Vetovest platform called relative timing, it ticked up in early May. It ticked up over one. The measurement is between 0 and 2. When it goes over one, there's a flag up to Vetovest members. It then fell back to year lows and then moved sharply higher off the year lows in late July. So the relative timing metric today is rated at 1.29, which is very good. But also there's a very good relative value metric, which is an indicator of long-term price potential of 1.42. Now, all of this is backed up by strong fundamentals and charts. Interim results for the year, publishing in August, recorded a 9% increase in revenues, adjusted operating profits up 22%, sustained growth of 6% of live customer policies, which saw the group increase its share of the UK insurance market, the UK private car insurance market, to 7.5%. The CEO said the company's on track for its 2019 targets. It was a set of results they were proud of, and the board voted for a 10% increase in the interim dividend as well. This is also backed up by an improvement in the solvency coverage ratio, and also a boost in free cash, which is up from 42 million to 107 million for the period. From a charting standpoint, there was what's called major reverse divergence between the share price and the MACD indicator, which forecasts it's a very positive indicator for further upside moves. So there's a positive technical picture in place there as well. Vetovest has a price target of 367p versus the current 270p. So there's quite a bit more to come. And given the outlook from the CEO, given the bullish technical picture, there's every reason, I think, to believe that this company can go on and achieve its full year results and push on to that level, given also what it's done to date. It's got a history of gaining market share and also over delivering on the way through over the past few years.
Lovely stuff. So it's what, Hastings Group, HSTG. Yeah,
HSTG. That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Marvelous stuff.
If you go to the Brand UK brandukuk.net website, look under research and Vetovest, you'll find this article actually on the platform. So if you want to read up more about it, there's all the information is there. If you want to take a look,
I see. Oh, that's very helpful. Thank you very much for that.
Not at all.
Fantastic stuff. Lovely, Al. Thanks for that, and we'll chat next week, fella.
Thank you, Jess. Speak next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Oriel Resources, ORR. At 4, Europa Metals, EUZ. At 3, Strategic Minerals, SML. At 2, Predator Oil and Gas, PRD. And number 1 most followed company is Bidstack, and they listed yesterday. It's BIDS. Okay, top 5 most followed companies, or most liked RNSs, I should say, are at 5, update on Blueberry projects from Vast. At 4, Beta Play license update. That's also Vast Resources. At 3, Ascent Resources, interim results for the period ended 30th of June. At 2, Riabol Resources, update on California. That's, of course, Stephen talking about that earlier. And number 1, most liked RNS, came from Europa Metals, updated JORC mineral resource estimate for Toral. Hopefully, Lauren is coming on the podcast very soon. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.